and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm so excited about our episode today. I am so excited to introduce you to my new friend, Alexandra Stockwell, who is a MD and a relationship and intimacy expert just like me. So I was so surprised as I'm getting to know her better, how closely our lives and our messages actually resemble each other's. So she helps couples build beautiful, stable, long-lasting, sexy relationships. She's the best-selling author of Uncompromising Intimacy and the creator of Aligned and Hot Marriage Program. Alexandra believes the key to passion, fulfillment, intimacy, and success isn't compromise. It's being unwilling to compromise, because when both people feel free to be themselves and know how to love and be loved for exactly who they are, the relationship is juicy, nourishing, and deeply satisfying. For over 20 years, she has shown men and women how to bring pleasure and purpose into all aspects of life, from the daily grind of running a household to clear and intimate communication to ecstatic experiences in the bedroom. Please help me welcome our guest today, Alexandra Stockwell. How are you?
I am really well. And I have to say, I loved hearing you read that introduction. I think I've heard it read, on the way to 200 times in various interviews. And people usually, like, they're reading the words, sometimes they stumble, sometimes they don't. But when you say it, it's so meaningful. Like, it really feels like true content coming out of your mouth. So that was really pleasurable to hear.
Do you want to know why? It's because I relate so closely. Your message is almost exactly my message. And it's so fun to find someone that you're so closely aligned with and you agree with so much. Like, I'm so excited for this interview right now.
Me too. And I'm a medical doctor. I practiced family medicine for 12 years. I've done a lot of different trainings, both kind of buttoned up and conventional and also kind of edgy with shocking elements. I've really done a lot of different trainings so that I can draw on all of that and serve my clients deeply. But it means that typically I feel like a pioneer. And one of the things that comes up for me as an entrepreneur and a businesswoman is, well, who is your competition? Not so much in an unfriendly sense, but like, who else is doing what you're doing? And prior to meeting you, I have to say that my answer typically was, well, you know, there really isn't anybody doing what I'm doing who has been married for, you know, more or less, give or take 20 years, raised children, and drawing on all kinds of different trainings as well as our lived experience. But now there is someone that I can say.
Well, I love it. Well, you've been doing it a lot longer than I have, but I love that I now have another mentor in the space who is so passionate about helping couples create intimate and sexy and fun relationships just like I am. And so I will draw on your experience in every way. But I feel like there's no competition in this space, because if you are helping couples have an exciting, amazing sex life, then you are a friend to me, because I feel like there just needs to be more of us out there just touting the benefits of a healthy, thriving sexual relationship within marriage.
I agree with you completely for all the reasons that you said and a few more that I'm going to add. And I think, you know, who is your competition is sort of a concept from business that doesn't really pertain. I think it's so important. Well, two reasons. One is that relationships, especially the marital relationship, is so private and sacred. And for anyone who has the vision and the courage and the yearning and the willingness to actually improve their marriage, I think it's super important that they be able to connect with someone where there isn't an additional challenge or hurdle because they're not comfortable with that person. There are enough challenges and hurdles to say to your partner, I love you so much and it's not really working for me, or however one expresses that. And so to be able to have a whole buffet of different people, you know, maybe you're attracted to someone who's older, maybe someone who's younger, someone who talks really quickly and has a lot of very analytical information and refers to the data a lot. Or while I have the capacity to do that, I tend to speak a little bit more slowly, because the part of us which is listening and learning when it comes to relationships is not the part of our brain and our being which gets A's in classes. And so I want to be able to speak to the part that isn't quite so analytical. Anyway, I think it's so great that you do what you do, I do what I do, and I absolutely agree. I wish there were many more. And another reason that I feel this way is that in my mind, being able to have a really nourishing, stable, really fulfilling marital relationship or relationship with an intimate partner is the key to solving so many of the challenges we currently face. When it comes down to it, whether we're talking about sex or emotional intimacy or clear communication, what you're doing and what I'm doing is teaching people how to have deeper connection, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. It's my conviction that when we learn how to have deeper, genuinely nourishing connection with our partner, we have the capacity to connect more deeply in similar and different ways with our children, our extended family, our colleagues and coworkers. This sounds a little bit like a Pollyanna, but I actually think it's quite literal that if the vast majority of human beings knew how to have really great intimate relationships, that most of our big issues would either resolve or be considerably softened because we would know how to collaborate and come to good solutions and be able to take into consideration perspectives different from our own. And I think that the skills that naturally evolve when creating a really great relationship, they help in solving climate change and racial inequity and political divisiveness. We're not going to talk about all those things, but I really think that learning to overcome whatever one has to come in oneself in order to be available for a really beautiful relationship with a partner, those skills carry over across our lives in every place that we show up.
Well, I love that so, so much. And I honestly hope that we get to work together on a lot of these things in the future. Let's start by introducing you to our audience and having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family.
Okay, great. Well, I actually want to start when I was a little girl. When I was 9 years old, my parents got divorced. I have step-parents, and between all the different parents and step-parents, there have been a lot of marriages, obviously a lot of divorces as well. So when I grew up, I, on the one hand, definitely wanted to have a fantastic marriage. And on the other hand, I didn't have any internal reference point. I didn't really think that was possible for me. This was the yearning for a great, fantastic marriage and also the belief that it wasn't really possible for me. Both of those were pretty unconscious until I got married to my fantastic husband. Our next anniversary will be our 25th. So the end of the story is yes, we have this amazing relationship. But when we were first married, I really felt like there were two people inside me, the one who just was really happy and in love and just so glad to be creating a life with this wonderful man. And the other part of me that was almost like taking note because I knew it wasn't going to work out. And I wanted to be able to tell my children in the future how their parents had had a great relationship at the beginning. And at some point, I realized this just is not how I wanted to live. Through a lot of different twists and turns, I prioritized making sure that we have a really fantastic marriage. I learned how to do that through my medical training, through various trainings, and also trial and error. Now, here we are. We've been married for 24 years. We have 4 children. Our relationship continues to get better and better. It is totally a journey. The only destination is whatever's ahead because it's always getting better.
I love that so much. And what an awesome example of how our mess becomes our message. I feel like I have a very similar journey in that in the beginning of my marriage, all the time I was just waiting for the bottom to drop out. I was like, this is all that I've ever seen is a marriage like this that didn't work out. It's like too good to be true. And then I just decided to go the opposite direction and dedicate my life to making my marriage amazing. And now I help others do the same. And so I love that. So,
and actually, I think it's really worth adding, any of us who have divorced parents, we can connect with the truth of what's already been spoken. But for people who have parents who are still married, either happily or not, there's still something that arises places where we have a lack of role models. And as humans, we are mammals and we learn through imitation, especially about how to have relationships. And so even if you're listening and your parents are happily married, what we're speaking about is still very relevant because your parents or grandparents who love one another and have a beautiful marriage, it doesn't mean that's what you want your marriage to look like. You're still a pioneer in your own marriage because you're married to somebody different. It's a different era in terms of what's expected, in terms of who's the provider and women being more expressed in general in our society. There's so much that is different in our marriages compared to our parents and grandparents that it's false to think, oh, I know what I want it to look like, because you still need to invent it with the individual that you are with who comes with his or her set of life circumstances. So I really think there's a way in which from the outside and the way our society talks about it, marriage can look sort of like ho-hum and kind of like rote, and Disney certainly makes it seem that way, that all the excitement is up until you say I do, and then after that, you know, it's just kind of relatively static. And actually, I think the age of exploration, the equivalent to that, is in marriage, because we're all pioneers in our own marriages and all need to invent what's going to work for the two of us.
I absolutely agree. I think that's beautiful because we are all the creators of our own marriage. Speaking of creating our own marriages, you wrote a book called Uncompromising Intimacy about the pitfalls of compromise. And I actually don't like that word very much either. So I'm so excited to discuss this with you. But I'm going to let you talk about why not compromising is the key to a truly fantastic relationship.
Okay, well, let's start by saying that in the Western world, the most common relationship advice given is that you need to learn to compromise. If you want a successful marriage, you have to get good at compromise. Compromise is what makes a relationship happy. And I just think that is completely wrong. That might be true for a moment in the short term, but the fact is, if you compromise, you let your partner's needs be more important than yours or what you think they are. And so you don't ask for what you want, or you feel uncomfortable and you push it aside and you just kind of let things slide and push it under the rug so everything is good. And you just believe in compromising. The thing is that then there are parts of yourself that you're basically leaving outside of your marriage. Things that are important to you, a little important or a lot, doesn't really matter, but you're saying, these parts of me don't really matter. I'm just going to focus on what works for him or what I think is going to work for him. When we then get into the bedroom, we don't have some switch that we can then flip in order to be fully present, fully expressed, bring our whole juicy self in order to interact in a wonderful, sensual way, because we are in the habit of turning off parts of ourselves and disconnecting from our desires and making our own needs and our own internal experience less important in order to compromise for what's happening overall. And one of my really favorite sayings from the personal growth world is, how you do anything is how you do everything. And that really is relevant here, because if you are used to compromising in your communications day to day, it's not really possible to be uncompromising when it comes to intimacy. That's one thing. And another thing that I'll say, in the context of a long-lasting relationship and a stable marriage, everything which isn't sex is foreplay, because this doesn't pertain at all with a one-night stand or some kind of a casual fling. But if you are living with your partner, everything that you are doing is some form of foreplay, which is either bringing you closer together or building up walls, resentment, and separation. And so when I say to be uncompromising, I don't mean that you get your way every time or that you dominate. That would just, if two people are doing that, that would just be a mess. No, it's about, with vulnerability and honesty, bringing everything that's important for you into the relationship and inviting your partner to do the same and learning how to receive that. And then the two of you figure out what's going to work. So that is what I'm referring to when I say uncompromising intimacy.
I love that so, so much. And I feel like I have so much to add. And maybe we just talk about this one thing for this episode, because I actually have kind of a guttural reaction to that word compromise as well. And I feel like when you start compromising on things, then A, you're completely cutting off all creativity to solve the problem. And B, nobody wins in a compromise. That's everyone being half happy or not happy at all. I truly do think, and I think this is my next question for you, is what should we be doing instead? said, how can we be uncompromising and still work together and collaborate and be creative with our partner so that everybody's kind of getting what they want?
I really think the essential first step, which sounds simple, but is so profound, is to cultivate curiosity. And it's often easier to start by being curious about your partner and asking questions about what they want and how they think about things. And I'm going to say more about that in a minute, but I want to say that the very natural consequence of being curious about your partner is that you become more curious about yourself. There's only a part of us which is conscious, and certainly when it comes to relationships and sensual connection, a lot of the unconscious is present and relevant. Part of it being unconscious is that we don't get to choose what's there. And one of the most important things that we don't actually get to choose are our own desires. We get to choose how we respond to them, but we don't get to choose what we actually desire. So when it comes to being uncompromising and being curious, part of that is so that we have enough self-acceptance and enough compassion and curiosity and devotion to our partner to be willing to know what the desires are. I'll just say one more thing, that one of the pitfalls of compromise is that in prioritizing something other than what lives within us, we often disconnect. When I coach couples who deeply love one another, maybe they've been married together for 15 years, 25, 32, and I say to the wife, what do you want? And I'm saying that in a way that it's totally clear that any answer is going to be fine. There's no judgment. It's like, what do you want? And it is so common for women to say, I don't know. And these are women who, when it comes to choosing their children's clothing and choosing what's for dinner, planning a great vacation, coordinating a milestone birthday party for a husband, these are not women who don't have access to what they want and how to do things for other people or when it's for the good of the family. But even sometimes it can go all the way down to, well, you know, what kind of food do you like? Would you like to have Chinese food today, or would you like to have pizza? We're going to be super simple here. For a woman to just like get quiet and put away the shoulds, and never mind that, you know, her husband prefers Chinese or that the children only eat pasta and there's pasta at the pizza. Like when you just push away all those other things and don't honor them because that would be compromise, and just really get clear, like, what do you want? What do you desire? What would delight you? There are many women who, when they put away all the shoulds and considerations of convenience and other people's needs, don't actually know the answer. When I say, how do we learn to be uncompromising? Yes, cultivating curiosity is essential. But right behind that is coming to know and accept our desires. I think it's really obvious to you, Monica, and to me, but I want to like include our listeners in knowing that if what you want is to have a really meaningful sex life, well, one of the most essential ingredients is knowing what you want. And when it comes to sex, you might not know what you want because you don't even know what the options are. But to be willing to tap in and very gently touch your forearm very slowly and then touch it a little bit faster and know which one you desire more takes a kind of slowing down and making room for a part of yourself that it's just true that many women live compromising that aspect. What do you think when you hear this? How do you speak about the same phenomenon? Because I'm sure you do.
Yeah. So this is the first time I've ever talked about it in this context before, but I'm kind of pulling together a lot of the things that I do talk about. And what's coming to the forefront right now while you're talking is the beauty of conflict. I think a lot of us grow up trying to avoid conflict in some way, whether it's the learned behavior in our family or something like that. And so I think what happens is we go into marriage and we think, avoid conflict at all costs. One of us or both of us starts to compromise pieces of ourselves in order to avoid conflict. And when you were talking about curiosity, I thought, here is the formula to really turn conflict into creativity, which is what I talk about all the time is curiosity and vulnerability. When we can be curious about ourselves and curious about our partners and then feel comfortable to get vulnerable about the things that we really want, we can turn conflict into creativity. Meaning when we feel comfortable in our relationship that it's strong enough, our attachment and our bonds and this relationship that we've created is strong enough for me to become the person I want to be, explore all the desires and passions and things that are within me, and then I know my partner is going to be curious and be able to tolerate vulnerability and self-expression and all of those things, and I create an environment where my partner can do the same, then you have this beautiful environment that you can cultivate, making mistakes and learning who you are and trying something and then trying something different. There's no need to compromise in that situation because you can become who you are by sharing your passions and your desires and your fantasies and all of the things that live inside of you without fear of conflict.
I love how you've expressed that, and I wholeheartedly agree. And I want to just add a few more things because sometimes it's easy to know what we desire. Sometimes we have the curiosity about ourselves and have access to that. And sometimes we don't. But invariably, we do have access to complaining. The thing that is so important to remember is that underneath every complaint is a desire. And so sometimes if I ask someone, well, what do you want to be experiencing with your husband? She's like, I don't know. It's like too far outside of her imagination. She hasn't been creative in the way that you're referring to. I will sometimes not suggest she communicate this way with her husband, but in speaking with me, say, well, what's one of your complaints about him? It's always very simple, not for the person feeling the complaint, but for somebody listening, and certainly for me or you, to listen and hear, oh, what you really desire is, you know, whatever. It's like, he never pays attention to me. Well, that's a really easy one. What you desire is to have more attention. Or he always just comes home and gets on his phone. It's just so irritating. Well, maybe your desire is for you to have a little bit of alone time too. Maybe your desire is that he spends 5 minutes on the way from the car to the front door to like recalibrate. So by the time he walks in, he's ready to engage with you. I mean, there are actually so many different desires that might be camouflaged in that complaint. So I want to say that because part of the transition that you're talking about from conflict to connection involves expanding enough to actually transition out of a complaint and into the desire. But expressing a desire can feel really, really vulnerable. And so it can feel a lot easier to either squelch the complaint or state it and sound critical and not get what you want because your partner doesn't want to be criticized. But if you actually have the courage to slow down and express the desire, which as I say, can be very vulnerable, a whole new world of possibility becomes available in that marriage. And actually, I want to give a specific story. I gave a talk in January of 2020, and I talked about the importance of being vulnerable and gave some guidance in how to have a vulnerable conversation with your partner, because we're not born knowing how to do that. And if it's not something that you already do, there's some very clear steps that can be taken to create that. I shared that, and this woman, she was really introverted. She'd been married for 30 years, and she asked me a question. She said, but what if I say to my husband that something is important to me and he just doesn't really pay attention? He doesn't seem like he's heard me. And so I said to her, then you need to say it with more vulnerability. Because when someone loves you, if you speak with vulnerability, he will pay attention. And so she was skeptical. She's a kind of analytical introvert. And I don't think she was so convinced when I said that. But just coincidentally, 1 month later, we happened to be at a meeting. It was the second time I'd ever met her. And she came up to me, and actually she didn't even look at me. It was so profound and impactful that she kind of looked sideways, spoke in a low voice, and her eyes filled with tears. And I'm skillful enough to have just kind of looked the other way, kind of the way you talk with teenagers sometimes when they're telling you something important. And she said she was able to be vulnerable. And she said to her husband in a really gentle, heartfelt, courageous way, sometimes I don't feel that important. important. And she was completely astonished when he responded, "Sometimes I feel that way too." And she had no idea, because in her mind, he was kind of on top of things and getting his needs met and feeling important. This is the first time either one of them had spoken with so much vulnerability, and it opened up a whole new way of connecting and accessing joy.
That's amazing. I love that example too, because it just illustrates when we feel comfortable to be vulnerable, we're inviting that vulnerability from our partner as well. And that's really when you get this beautiful creativity and collaboration and connection, when you can both be curious and vulnerable with each other. Like, that's the goal to me, I think, is to just teach couples how to get curious and vulnerable. And not only in their conversations outside of the bedroom, but very much in their conversations inside of the bedroom and in their experiences inside the bedroom, because curiosity and vulnerability, to me, is the key to this long-term passion that we're all seeking after.
I agree. And I usually encourage people to start leaning in and playing with being more vulnerable on matters which are actually relatively benign and are not in the bedroom. Because once people are in the bedroom, then the content itself is so, it can be delicious, and it also can be very confronting and complicated. And so if both of you already trust your ability to begin a vulnerable conversation and feel awkward and vulnerable, and then get through to the other side, invariably feeling more connected and more affectionate, and I think that's really part of what you're referring to when you say more creative, that when you know that the two of you have the ability to do that, then when it's about how it feels when he's lying on top of you, or when you want a certain kind of music, or when you want to try something that you don't even know if he's ever heard of it. If you've already had these vulnerable conversations about non-sexual matters, starting with things that are very simple, you'll be able to trust that you'll make it through to the other side and end up closer. So something like when you expect your husband to do the dishes and he hasn't done them, that's an awesome starting point because it's just the dishes, but it can be very, very vulnerable depending on how it is that you make your communication. For me, when that arises, whereas I used to say, well, honestly, early in our marriage, I just said nothing. And when I would be resentful and it would come out sideways, sometimes I was aware of it, sometimes I wasn't. But then as I learned to speak up and have my voice in my own marriage, I might say, "I really wish you'd done the dishes. You know, you said you would and you didn't," or sometimes worse. But now when something like that happens, it actually doesn't happen anymore because I learned to say it like this: "Sweetheart, I have something really vulnerable to tell you. Are you available to hear it?" I'm illustrating something, but I'm also teaching a method. So if you're listening, the first thing, it's so important to actually delineate that you're making a vulnerable communication, because if you're not in the habit of doing that and you just sort of slide it in a little bit, like sending the canary into the gold mine, it's going to be too subtle and he's not likely to perceive it. So I highly recommend literally calling attention to it and saying, "I want to share something vulnerable," or "I have something complicated I need to tell you. Are you available?" And then he'll say yes or no. And it has to really be a choice. And then I'll say why I'm saying it and what my desired outcome is. So in the case of the dishes, "Are you available? I have something vulnerable to share with you." "Sure, let me just finish this up and I'll be available in 20 minutes, you might say. And I'll say, "Okay, great." And then I'll say, "There's something that's really been bothering me a lot. It's kind of getting in the way of my paying attention to everything else that we're talking about. And so I want to tell you, because when we resolve it, I'm actually really looking forward to having a very special time together tonight." Then he's not listening, waiting to be criticized. He's listening, knowing that what I'm really doing is paving the way for some fun in the bedroom, and he will be able to listen with that goal in mind. And then I'll say, "When you didn't do the dishes, I felt really hurt. I felt like I'm unimportant to you, and my experience doesn't really matter. You weren't really taking into account the impact on me, and I just felt rejected and small. It's not even so much that you didn't do the dishes, it's that my feelings were hurt so much because you not doing that had me feel like what you said to me really didn't matter. If you're listening and you're not in an abusive relationship or anything extreme where what I'm saying wouldn't pertain, then it's very normal to have a response like my husband said, which is like, oh, I just fell asleep. I had no idea. I'd love to do them now. And, you know, he'll give me a hug and tell me like there was none of that intended and it wasn't what he was thinking. He actually meant to do them later or whatever the case may be. But if I don't actually bring up what my experience is, then I don't ever get to check the reality and see where I'm projecting. And if I'm not projecting, then we can work that out too. He gets to see how every little thing he does impacts me and vice versa. And we're invariably going to be closer. And it's quite likely things are going to be steamy after that kind of a vulnerable communication.
Yeah, I love that so much. I would invite as well. So you did such a fantastic job illustrating the vulnerability there. And I would just bring in a little bit of the curiosity component by starting that whole exchange with, honey, didn't we talk about you doing the dishes? I'm just wondering why there's still dishes in the sink. Like, what happened, right? I think the curiosity coupled with the vulnerability is such a beautiful way to really not have to compromise yourself and show up as you are with those boundaries in place and not just be like, early in our marriage, I would have done the same thing. I would have just been like, oh, I'll just do it. And then I would have resented it, right? And so I think you can move forward into those situations and honor yourself much better by recognizing that if I show curiosity, like, why did the dishes not get done? Maybe there's a really great reason that he didn't do the dishes. And maybe it doesn't have anything to do with devaluing you or what you felt like was important.
It probably doesn't.
Right, exactly. And so you're actually inviting him to explain why the dishes didn't get done. You know, it certainly probably had nothing to do with you or how he felt about you. But then if it's something that happens a lot, then you can express vulnerably, like, this is how I feel when the dishes don't get done repeatedly when it's your responsibility to do them. And then I start to feel like this, and then you're vulnerable, and then invite him to be vulnerable as well. I love this.
Wait, can I just say one thing? Because our approaches are so similar and so complementary, there's something that's way more nuanced that I wouldn't bring up in a lot of situations, but I want to with you right now.
Yeah.
Which gets to the heart of my understanding of what it means to be uncompromising. If the issue is getting the dishes done, then I wholeheartedly agree with starting with, hey, sweetheart, you know, what happened with you and the dishes, and really leaning into curiosity. But the context for my not starting that way is that when we're creating a relationship where there is true uncompromising intimacy, when I make that communication, it's almost not even about the dishes. It's about me sharing my internal world. It's about me saying, I open my legs and invite you into my body. And with this communication, I'm opening my heart and my soul and my internal world and inviting you to be here with me. I just want to add, the curiosity is so, so important as a general modality in marriage and when one is wondering how to make sure the dishes are done. But there's a place for just being vulnerable, even if logically the whole thing made sense and is going to be resolved. There's a place for being vulnerable as a way of sharing the truth of who I am, because as I do that, I become more integrated, more present, more available, more soft, and I invite many more aspects of his soul to blend with mine. So I want to say yes, I'm a big yes to curiosity and vulnerability, but I wouldn't want to have the curiosity kind of supersede the need for the vulnerable communication of how I felt.
Absolutely, I agree. They are both so, so, so important. I think that marriage of curiosity and vulnerability, I think they're both important. You really can't have one without the other, honestly.
Right, right. And it's up to you. If you're listening and you've got a thing that's bugging you, it's up to you which one you lead with. And probably curiosity is the best one to lead with most of the time.
Yes. I totally, totally, totally agree. I feel like we've done some great work here, really talking about the importance of curiosity and vulnerability when it comes to compromise and really developing this passion and intimacy that we're all seeking. I think we should probably do a part two of this interview, but for now,
I would love to.
But for now, I just want to ask you my signature question. If you had the undivided attention of every couple in the entire world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about uncompromising intimacy?
If I had the attention of all those couples, what I would want to say is no matter what your childhood situation, what your prior relationship experience is with other people and with your partner now, having a fantastic relationship is a learnable skill. And we have covered a lot of the skills and there are many more to learn. But if you are willing to be a student of relationships, you are sure to reap the rewards.
So well stated. Thank you so much, Alexandra, and for your time and for all of your research and your work in this area. Please tell my listeners where they can find you and learn more and work with you if they want to.
I'm at alexandrastockwell.com. And my book, which I think if you've been listening this far, you have a good sense of the kinds of things that are in it. If you'd like to download and read the first chapter for free, you can go to chapter.alexandrastockwell.com to continue the conversation. And I love talking with people. So if there's anything about our conversation which stuck out for you, you want to know how to do it, or you just want to let me know what it made you think of and reminded you of something, please reach out through the contact form on my website and I would love to be in connection with you.
Awesome. And we'll make sure that all of that is linked in the show notes. And thank you so, so, so much, Alexandra, for your time today.
Thank you.
I loved that chat with Alexandra so much. I love that we both feel so strongly about this idea of uncompromising intimacy being the key to a passionate, pleasurable, fulfilling, long-lasting, loving relationship. If you have any questions about any of the concepts that we discussed in today's episode, please get a copy of her book, Uncompromising Intimacy. I have not read it yet, but I am so looking forward to it. And if you want to dive deeper into these ideas, please reach out to either one of us, as I'm sure we would love to help you figure these things out in your own relationship. If you want a kickstart on developing more passion and fun in your marriage, be sure to download a copy of my 51 Ways to Initiate Sex with Your Spouse. You can get a copy of that by messaging me on either Facebook or Instagram, and I'll send you a copy. You could also join my free Facebook group On the Brighter Side of Marriage, where there are tons of marriage resources to help you really ignite that passion and fun in your marriage. Be sure to join us on Friday for the second installment of Conversations with Interracial Couples. I'll be chatting with the Dumases and they are amazing. You're not going to want to miss that. And then next week, I'm sitting down with Jessica Frew of Husband in Law, and you're also not going to want to miss her incredible story. So until then, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.